Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode
of We the People.
We're always having an episode. Today we're kind of, we actually planned better than we do other days, so we don't sound quite so, you know, harried.
Frantic.
It takes away our fun, though. You know, honestly. Rushing is good for us.
Yeah, it is.
So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power, our local John Deere Kubota dealer. You're looking for a tractor or looking for tractor repairs or riding lawnmowers, any of that kind of stuff, go see Team Power up in Shasta Lake City. They're off of Twin View Boulevard, 3119 Twin View Boulevard.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's easy for me to
say. Right near Phil's Propeller.
Yeah,
it's easy to find. There's like 1,000 bass boats stacked up.
Yeah, go up there on a weekend, look for a bass boat, you'll find them. The phone number up there is 226-9226, and right now they're running their winter service special. So if you have tractor or lawn equipment that needs to get tuned up or ready for the season, give them a call and talk to them about their service special. I think they can save you some money. So go see them, Team Power on Twin View Boulevard.
Sure. When are they open?
They're open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5.
8 to 5?
Monday through Friday,
What do you guys have, banker's hours?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, no, that's like, what is that, 10 to 4 or something like that?
Yeah, 10 to 4.
Bankers don't have hours because we never go in the bank. I don't know what their hours are anymore.
Yeah, I don't think they need hours.
We're old. We used to call it banker's hours. Now nobody knows what we're talking about.
What are you talking about?
Yeah. So,
what are we doing today?
Well, okay, it's what we did last week and December 17th, because the previous show mentioned that they really, really liked last week's program and thought we should air it more often. And the rest of you that heard it said, well, are probably saying, no, don't do that. But if you missed last week, I really do hope you'll go back. We did two shows with Dr. Drum, D-R-U-M. He is a pharmacist and did two shows for us on marijuana from the pharmacy point of view. And a lot of times you hear from, you know, well, you always hear from the media. And so anyway, if you want to know what's really going on with pot, how it really affects people, the fact that it's a hallucinogen, if that's a new fact for you, you should definitely go listen to that program. So we have it on the archives at wethepeopleradio.us. And you can find shows dating all the way back to 2010. But that was one that we aired in December and thought maybe you missed it because you were all tangled up with Christmas. But pretty darn interesting, and I think you'll like it. Today, however, we're moving on to national security. If I get my screen to come up, I can tell you what we're doing. We have our guest with us, Bruce Moran, who's the national security advisor with Security Solutions Technology. They are a veteran-owned company that provides federal government consulting, IT professional services, security assessments, cybersecurity. They do all basically security stuff at the national level. So Bruce is a frequent flyer with us. He comes on and gives us the real scoop, what's actually going on, and they work with the current administration out of the old White House there. So they work with the Trump administration on a variety of projects, border security, all that kind of good stuff. So Bruce has given us a little outline for today, and I've listed it for you on the page. It's actually in PDF format. If you need something different, my email's on there. Just email me, and I'll send you a Word document. But four world power plays in continuous action. It's pretty darn interesting stuff. And some of it you've heard, some of it you haven't, but he'll give us kind of the behind the scenes. And he's in there. Hey. We got him captive from his time zone 2 hours away. So yeah.
Welcome, Bruce.
So should we look forward to 2 hours from now? Or are we going to enjoy it?
I hope so.
You're like a time traveler.
Yeah. Any questions? Any answers? I called in earlier and thought I was a call-in, so.
And you're like, well, I don't know what they're talking
ask
about.
A question.
That's what you get penalized here for being early.
Okay.
Yeah, that only works. That only works other places. That's why I really like radio. You know, because I'm not really all that big on being early. But you gave us a ton of information on here, so we're just going to let you take it because we read it, but we didn't write it, so we're unqualified, actually, to lead the discussion here.
Let's start at the very beginning.
Sure.
Okay, right where we want to start. Okay. Now, there's a lot of play going on with the Russians, And I find it interesting in more ways than one, because the Russians are a world power, and sometimes they're good guys, sometimes they're bad guys. They come in and out. They're good guys here, bad guys there, good guys here. And how I look at it is a very complex national security play for world powers, United States, China, Russia. I mean, we're all part of this large picture where you have espionage. So as you see what I wrote there, I put the Lunarian Hydra. Well, what that is the shadow world. And the shadow world is, maybe you can think of Hercules coming in and fighting the Hydra and defeating it. But in present tense terms, we're looking at it being in a morphing condition. A Hydra in the mythology terms in Greek and Roman mythology, you cut off its head, and one head would appear, and another head would appear, so you get two heads. Cut off two heads, you get four heads. So this is what's going on. I put morphing there. It morphs. It changes into what other things can be. Because if you look at what the Russians were doing during the elections, they were positioning themselves on both sides against Trump, you know, and then for Trump. So you had a whole slew of things transpiring before and after the elections. As the article had pointed out, a lot of the monies that were played by the Russians went in after the election. In other words, they're supporting pro-Trump and those people against Trump. So they're trying to make their inroads, well, how I would say infiltration, and to see the impact they can have on the country. So when people say it's just the Russians, well, it's a small part of the national security picture. Yes, it is the Russians, but you also have the Russians, not only political, but technology-wise, industrial-wise, corporate secrets, and the USG infiltration into the United States government, combating the CIA, the FBI. You also have the military. So we have, you know, the Islamic State we're fighting, but they're fighting it, and then we're both fighting together, and we're both fighting on different sides. So do you see the play I'm talking about?
No wonder we can't get anything done.
Yeah, well, it's very complex. You know, that's why when we look at confidential, secret, top secret, and special access programs, and I talk about problems with that, it goes across the board. It didn't just exist with Hillary Clinton and her email server. It existed in everything we do. Once things are compromised in the whole sense of the world play of the continuous action of the powers, they're always coming in and out. And they're doing insidious acts and behaviors that normal people don't understand what's going down.
Well, and so, we do this too. I mean,
exactly right.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I think people may not consider or know is we do this as well. So, So the idea, it's like everybody just
somebody's meddling in our stuff.
Oh God, they took out Facebook ads and tried to, you know, make everything chaotic. What do you think we're doing? I mean,
well, I think Merkel had something to say about it.
No kidding.
When we tapped her, I mean, she was not the happiest camper in Germany at the time.
And tell me this, the media now has chosen to go from, you know, Trump colluded, blah, 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 to now they've kind of moved it over to the idea that the Russians weighed in to help Trump. But they really played both sides. They helped Hillary and they helped him. They basically just were causing chaos.
Well, as in the article, and I know this happens personally, but they try to make inroads any way they can. They'll be for Trump, so their agents, the spies, will go for Trump and then go against Trump. And they try to work their way up the ladder. It's a normal operating procedure. You try to get as much intel as you can from both sides of the argument, because if you look at Azerbaijan or Georgia, where the Russians were at, they infiltrated both sides because they needed to take control. Because they had the Al-Qaeda operations going there, and the Uzbekis were fighting them. So they know how to do this. They've been doing it since the Cold War because they had to do it. They controlled all the satellite states in Europe. I mean, we're talking about Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia. So this is part and parcel to the normal espionage procedures, or I call tradecraft, that's being done all the time. So the election meddling is just part and parcel of what they're doing. Is it something special? No. Did they get caught? Yes, to some degree. But we're doing it. Look what happened to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I guess a good way to look at it is with all the millions that they invested and all the interference they threw up, I don't really think it had much effect. It didn't really work out the way they wanted it to work out. So I guess our system
I
works.
I don't think we have the same idea that they had. They're doing it to collect information and infiltrate to get stuff on us.
Huh.
Right. They're not doing it to elect a candidate.
Yeah, it is for the candidate, and they most likely thought Hillary Clinton was going to win, so they came after her first, so they can get as much information out and infiltrate as much as possible there.
That's kind of funny. The Russians even believe our idiot media.
I think the reverse reciprocal relationship of what people are doing to find out how to infiltrate us. And maybe they were embedded already with the Democratic Party and Republican Party. To what extent, we don't know, because they're spies.
Exactly.
But there's a whole slew of things we can talk about, but the most important thing that we know is they got caught, the Chinese got caught, the Chinese got caught doing different things. We got the Office of Personnel Management, they got in there. I got over 100,000, security clearances on people. They got into a Boeing. I mean, they got convicted of that. And we're talking about this company as being a clearinghouse for misinformation for the Russians. If we just skip down there, I can't memorize everything because
it's
a vast amount of information.
Let's take a really quick break while you're skipping down. We'll do the same thing. And
okay, sure.
That would give people a chance. If you want to kind of follow along and read some of the extra information that Bruce sent us for today, you can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. We will be right back with our guest, Bruce Moran.
I think that's where.
That's when we closed the embassy.
Yeah, well, that's where they. That's what they did when they got indicted. They got in that plane and got the heck out of here.
Classic. All right, did you find our spot that we're coming in on, Bruce?
Sure.
Now that we're not back in the USSR.
So at the end of the Obama administration, they had expelled 35 Russian spies in two compounds. That's what we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But if you looked at what happened back in 2014, we saw the Chinese hacked into Boeing. And from that point of view, they got F-22, F-35 stealth jet secrets. So these kind of plays, like I'm saying, you chop off one head, you got the Chinese doing one thing on one end, the Russians doing one thing on the other. Chinese coming back with the Office of Personnel Management, hacking there. But it's not only hacking. There's physical people on the ground here in the United States. That's what people don't realize. Like you say, back in USSR, here, how lucky we are. Well, they're here. Claire knows that. I know that. And we got our hands full in terms of trying to protect our intellectual property rights. They just travel right out the door. As you see what it said there, it says they have such a sophisticated network of tens of thousands of human spies. These are the Chinese and computer hackers targeting America military and technological secrets. So it's just not what we're thinking about in the corporations. We have our Commerce Department where we keep all our intellectual property. We're getting hacked every which way. And that's called NIST. We need to have certain kind of software in place, encryption. And that's called SHA-1 and SHA-2. So it's various types of and SHA-3, various types of sophisticated encryption that needs to be in place for corporations just to place their intellectual property rights in place with Commerce Department so they're protected. And that's being hacked.
So,
this is
China,
new technology.
We're not hearing much about the Chinese these days. It seems to be,
Russians,
I should say the last year, it's Russia.
The elections. That's what I'm trying to convey.
Yeah, right.
There's so much going on. The cybersecurity world, the actual physical world, in the spy trade, what I call the shadow world tradecraft, is huge. And that's not being addressed.
Well, when they say they quote, hacked the elections, they make it sound like they manipulated the actual vote count. But that didn't happen.
No. And they used the word meddling in the elections. What they were doing was, I would say, misinformation propaganda so they can infiltrate. And that's normally done. Like I said, it was done in Hungary. Remember 1959 in Hungary when they had the big, you know, revolt? The Hungarians there's a big war going on. Then you had Azerbaijan, and then you had, recently it was Ukraine and Crimea, Sevastopol, where the Russians had their base. So this is not uncommon, but also it's not uncommon for other world powers like China to get involved in the same activities. And I don't think the Chinese got caught. The Russians got caught doing the election.
Right.
So, I mean, if they got caught, to what degree did they get caught, and who are these people, and are those their real names? Maybe we have their names because we know more about the Russians and their information bureau than we do about the Chinese.
Do you think...
don't have enough... okay, can I talk for one more minute?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm going to put a sweatshirt over Bill's head.
Yeah, you know, our covert operations aren't as good as they should be, and we need more people working in this area to protect the United States at a national security level. Our intelligence information coming back and forth needs to be bolstered. So what I'm talking about is HUMINT. Mm-hmm. It's H-U-M-I-N-T, human intelligence. We need more people that can go out there and do the kind of work they're doing against us. They've been doing it for, like I said, since World War II at the end. You know, that's their baby. They know how to do that. It's done through Stalin and through
Well, see, our guys think that it's all electronic. You know, we can...
Khrushchev pounding his heel at the UN, you know, all the way through Kennedy. It's always been there. So to the degree and to the extent that it's being covered by the media, they're covering a smaller portion of the real attack on the United States. And that's what the National Security Council is doing. You know, they're dealing with a larger scale. I work on strategic planning, so we can conclude it's a larger strategic plan, just not a fixated Russian meddling in the U.S. Elections.
Right.
So, do you think that it's worse now than it has been, or is it a case of we just now have more technology to protect and more technology to catch? Catch what's going on. I think
vice
they've always been.
Too. Like I said, a reverse reciprocal relationship. They can come in under our technology and do the same thing we're doing to them.
Right, right.
So also, that means at the end of 2016, the CIA gave up those tools. So those tools were out there, the means and methods of cybersecurity attacking. They gave those up.
Right.
They were exposed. And in April of April of 2017, the NSA tools were given up. I mean, I have a list, you know, I talk about, there's like 57 different areas and tools that were given up. And that's not good.
That is not good.
No.
And you don't hear about any of that.
It was talked about, but it's not directly addressed because we're trying to protect ourselves in our military and intelligence community.
So this whole, it's a fixation, I guess, on the Russia thing. Is that just numbing people to the actual program, misleading them both? Is it helping in any way to bring
Well, I think they need to be better educated, the American public, on the vast array of national security problems and issues. What the media does and pundits do is they just gravitate towards one or two things, and they just talk about that until ad infinitum. You know, that's where I don't like that, because it's biasing the American public from being aware it really needs to be done, and they need to watch out in your neighborhoods and all across the board. I mean, you see these TV programs that you have, some of this stuff, Homeland and that, but that's TV. And, people have their heads in their computers, their phones. They don't communicate. They're not watching. The Russians love that. The Chinese love that. The other, agents in all these other countries love that, because Americans aren't paying attention. And especially the Islamic terrorists, the jihadists. We have Claire would talk about on the Islamic State and the Muslim Brotherhood. But see what I'm talking about? There's so many different aspects to this that Americans aren't directly addressing. And then, there's a lot of creep that comes into, like the FBI, and they're saying that the upper echelon have been compromised and politicized and weaponized. Well, that can be true, but there's a larger segment of things that need to be done, and the president has to deal with that directly. See what I mean? Well, he's dealing with all this stuff, which it takes some time, not all his time, to deal with this, what he calls fake news or misinformation, I would call it. He has to deal with the real situations that's going on in Americans' daily lives, abroad, and foreign policy, and at home, on domestic policy, border security. Those are real things. The rest of the things is all political. And it doesn't really get to the essence of what needs to be done to protect the average American citizen. That's your individual rights, your freedoms, and your liberties.
Yeah, it doesn't educate people very well, and actually kind of lulls them into,
they become reactive.
Yeah, they think they know what's going on, and they don't. The Russians and the Chinese, it kind of reminds me of that thing.
They love that.
How do you outrun a bear? You know, you got to just run faster than the other guy. So the Russians got caught, and the Chinese are like, yes. Quick break, and we will be back.
But first, a word from our alternate.
But first, a word from capitalism. Our guest, Bruce Moran, will rejoin us. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Shout out to the Chinese. Perfect lead-in for our guest, Bruce Moran, who's a national security advisor with the Security Solutions Technology. Folks, he focuses on strategic planning for national security issues. As a consultant, he works with public officials, U.S. government committees, departments, agencies, think tanks, and corporations.
There you go. Hey, speaking of the Chinese.
What?
Secret Asian
we're
going to
talk about?
You're the dog. Can't be Chinese New Year.
That's right. You know, Bruce, we have a company here in town that trains Chinese pilots. It's a jet center here in town that trains Chinese pilots. And we have quite a contingent of Chinese here in our little small town that kind of occupy our airport. What kind of security measures do you think that has to go through to bring these folks over and train them how to fly jets?
Top level security clearance. They have to be approved. and then they have to have people watch over them to make sure they're part of the program and they don't go into the community.
Oh, well,
start infiltrating.
They do go into the community.
Because we were training people from Iraq. Some of them got into the community. We had to go fetch them back. I mean, that's common. We had the College of Americas where people coming in from South America and they, you know, train here to go back and do fighting down in South America.
Right.
That's common. But what the most important part of this is, what are we training them for and what benefit does it have for us in terms of our national security?
Right.
I don't know what they're being trained to do, or it could be part of the NASA program, and maybe they're going to be up in space. So that's a different, you know,
right.
animal
right.
In and of itself. So I don't know the particulars on it, but there's certainly a high-level security clearance that needs to be done to bring people in that can actually take a jet and then fly it into a building somewhere in, you know,
right.
San Francisco. You know, just take off, never come back.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a whole different level of training, the takeoff, no landing plan.
Yeah, I've always been curious about that because I see these folks in town quite a lot. And I mean, there's a bunch of them. And, I mean, they've actually set up, our city has set up bus routes for them to get back and forth to the airport. And so it's a pretty busy hub out there. And it always kind of made me wonder, as far as security goes, what are we doing training the Chinese how to fly planes? They can't train their own people?
That's the question I have. And what technology are they using? Because they just take our own technology and flap it onto their jets, too. Once
right.
they learn what it is. And they have their scientists. Like it says here, they like to steal everything if they can't get it through technology transfer. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of issues here where we're trying to protect our own corporations because that's how they make money.
Right,
and if you look at Boeing, you know they're assembling aircraft for the Chinese, so you got that. But those are commercial aircraft. So the question you're asking is, I'd be the same question I'm asking is, why are they here training on jet aircraft? You know,
mm-hmm.
yeah,
and
interesting.
What's the purpose?
So another thing you listed in your documents for today, how about this whole FISA thing?
Right.
Most of us never even heard of FISA until this Russia thing and then all the rest of it.
It's typically a secret court where you get a warrant to look at people who are agents and trying to infiltrate our country or get, like I was saying, intellectual property, you know, secrets, so they could advance their own technology in warfare. So, you know, guns, ships, planes. That's the question Bob's asking. I don't know. I mean, that's a good question to ask. I don't know the reason why they're here training. And what are they taking back with them? What can they drop in on a flash drive and take back to them with China that we don't know they're taking?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I think you're saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. So the FISA, in the Russia investigation, this whole FISA thing sounds like it went completely off the rails. With as far as the information that they gave the judge to issue the FISA warrant, do you know anything about that?
Sure.
That you can tell us?
You have to get it for a particular reason. It's usually terrorism or espionage or working with a foreign agent. So I look at what the current situation is with the election meddling. I think it was looking at how the Trump team was working with, and I'm talking about the Trump campaign, not the administration, was working with the Russians and what justification they had to get a warrant in the FISA court. Like I said, it's usually used for espionage and terrorism purposes. So this went in a little different direction, and now it's proving out to be false in so many different ways.
Because mm-hmm.
we're looking at the dossier, which was a compilation of data by Christopher Steele, and they had information in there that was obtained from their sources, I would say MI6 or their sources in Russia. So however they did it, and a lot of it proved not to be true. And it was just misinformation for propaganda purposes, but to disrupt the election on the Democratic side.
And so how do they protect themselves from that? I mean, they get this information They've got to vet that information before they go to a judge. And how do you do that? I mean, when it's coming from a foreign source, how do you...
Or a foreign, or a MI6 agent.
Yeah,
how do you... MI6 agent, or yeah. Was an agent, and then went, you know, the other way, you know, started his own private practice. So
Right.
Was,
so,
you know, that's you're talking about James Bond. Well, that's the MI6 group.
Right.
And that's what they do. So he was a Russian MI6 guy. In other words, he had his background in Russian strategy and tactics and how to handle them. And he knew his contacts over there. He knew who the Russian spies were and people on the ground.
Right. So do we
take, say, $1 million or $2 and just throw it on the ground there and give it to people, they could make up stories.
Right. So yeah, so when he comes up with information and gives it to our guys, just because he's MI6, we're supposed to believe that it's true information? Or is there some way we can, you know,
well,
cross-check that?
By the FBI, but they still issued warrants after that,
mm-hmm.
under the same premise, you know, the dossier.
Right.
But there's also other information coming in, so I can't make a highly qualified statement about it, but the dossier was one of the justifications for getting the FISA warrants, mm-hmm. that were about foreign intelligence, maybe, as we see, meddling, but to what degree, affecting the vote, no. Trying to infiltrate, yes. Trying to, you know, do propaganda, yes. You know, that's the common procedure. So for Russia, for China, like I was saying, that's what they did since World War II.
Right.
So what we're saying here is we have our head of our, you know, Pompey and everybody head of our agency saying this is the case, but it's stuff they do all the time anyway.
Right.
And it's not to say we don't do it, like I said, with Muammar Gaddafi and we were in Ukraine and different places like that. So what are we saying is this doesn't look good. They got caught, and to what degree they got caught, it doesn't look like it was a heavy duty.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't get into the, you know, to change the votes or anything like that.
Well, that was my other question was...
Very lightly and politely.
Right.
Well, it was. I mean, the part that's not being talked about out there is the end game wasn't the election. The end game was infiltration for the long haul.
That's right, and that's what the Russians want to do.
Right.
They want to make their way up the Republican Party, make their way up the Democratic Party, make their way up the Bernie Sanders Party, make their way up the Rubio Party, make their way up the Ted Cruz Party. Remember, they were attacking them, too.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're attacking them, they're trying to get support from them, too. You don't know what they were doing. They might have tried to have people attack Rubio and Cruz and then have their friends who are agents come in and get on the team.
Right.
Yeah, we'll help you. But it wasn't just, you know, November comes and goes and now they're all done. They all go home. I mean, this was worm your way in, stay, learn more stuff, worm your way up, stay.
Ongoing. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's the modus operandi of the spy tradecraft with the tetrahedra head. It keeps growing in different directions. It's part of the shadow world that exists everywhere.
Sure.
So that's what they do. And that's why the Russians are saying, well, you know, maybe you think that's what we did, but that's what we're doing in the way we wanted to do it. But, you know, so you have both sides, you know, saying, you know, what they actually are doing. And the purpose of espionage is to gain valuable intelligence and to infiltrate. And, you know, there's sometimes the, you know, the stuff you see on TV is the killings, but the most important thing is to get the proper intelligence and to get the advantages in the field of operations. Since we're not at war, then it's a technological war. It's a war not only of cybersecurity, but to develop the best and finest technology to be superior in your air, land, and sea forces.
Mm-hmm.
You have the best equipment for your guys. Like, well, you would have a biometric on the uniform of the guy, so you know where they're at, what they're doing, how they're doing. If they get shot, you know what their blood pressure is. You know how to rescue them. You know, see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Triangulating them in a GPS.
Been having a political party actually help these guys by giving them some information, by utilizing it to spy on Americans. We're literally helping the wrong team. I mean, really super short-sighted in an attempt to help themselves.
How would you think the Trump administration, let's forget the administration, the Trump campaign would work with them? They weren't establishment.
Right, right. That's what I mean.
Democrats or Republicans. They were, I'm not going to say it in a bad way, but they were a small group of people who didn't have the power and influence that both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party had. They were coming in.
And they were not likely to win.
Right. Right,
you know?
Right.
I don't mean in a bad way. It's just that President Trump knew what to do and how to get the average person in America with America, you know, security first, and the border security and the tax reform and, you know, changing ECHA around the best he tried. You know, that still has to be addressed. But, you know, he knew what to do. He knew what the establishment on both sides of the aisle weren't doing, and he tapped into the heart of the American people. He's great for that, you know, and the people are grateful for him for doing it. But now he has this long, drawn-out, tooth-and-nail battle with everybody pushing against him.
Right.
Yeah, and it's coming from everywhere.
We've got to take a break, yeah. But when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the technology we're using and how that technology is actually sometimes hurting or making it more difficult to carry on the tradecraft secretly and out of the public eye.
That question's too long. I'm sorry, that just won't work.
Okay.
I can answer it.
All right, you have 2 minutes to think about it while we celebrate capitalism. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Martine, send me to Moscow. Lounge and return, echo can't hear you. And as you wander through perfume and pathway,
song I've never heard of. Who was that? Just out of curiosity.
That was Tori Amos, Bug a Martini and Send Me to Moscow.
There you go.
Bug a Martini and Send Me to Moscow. Too bad you couldn't sing that in a funnier way. Because that's a very funny title.
I don't know how you sing it funnier. About the CFIUS process, too?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay, now what? Tell us what that is. I looked it up and now I already forgot what it is.
It's uranium one dealings.
CFIUS,
yes.
And government, their bureau of it's called the Russian Nuclear Energy Agency, dealing with uranium in the United States.
That's right. And CFIUS, for all the people who are like me and didn't know. Hang on, Bruce.
As the FISA court
warned
for the Russian meddling in the elections.
Right.
So how did Uranium One get through the whole system without a FISA warrant?
Exactly.
Aren't there spies in the United States that maybe want to have the Russians control the Uranium One deal?
Well, I don't know if you want to call them spies, but I think we definitely have people.
Oh, come on, we want to call them spies.
People, I would say, fairly high up in the administration or somebody
I'm not talking about the our administration. I'm talking about the real spies that are Russian in the United States trying to make this work.
Right, but they
with the administration officials.
Exactly. They have contact or have influence with certain people to allow something like that to ever even get off the ground. I mean, how'd that happen?
Yeah, and time out, boys. Okay, so CFIUS process, for those of you who have no idea what that means, like me this morning before I read this, is the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. So it's CFIUS. I think we've all gotten, you know, schooled on FISA, but CFIUS, I think, is a new acronym for people.
Yeah, I knew that.
I'm sorry, Bill can't be on the air anymore. We can't get his nose away from the microphone.
So talk to us about that, Bruce.
It has to go through a national security clearing process. And that's what I'm saying. Was that national security clearing process through having a company come in and buy a uranium company in the United States, that's their Uranium One through their nuclear agency, Russian agency, which actually runs the Iranian reactors themselves.
And they're such good guys. I mean, why wouldn't we want to help them?
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to say is, God, if the Russian nuclear agency under Rosatom is operating in Wyoming in the United States, and that can be converted into a weapon, and we're allowing them to do that, then what's to say when they're running the nuclear power plants in Iran, how is that going to coincide with our national security interest? It doesn't.
It doesn't.
That's all. I mean, it's pretty simple and straightforward. And who are on these committees? You know, and I put those names out there, you know. So it's Timothy Geithner, Barbara Boxer, Hillary Clinton.
So they had to put that together. I mean, they must have known that this was probably not a really great idea to let these folks have control or even access to this stuff. Well, how did they allow that to happen,
or why?
Well, that was in that poem I initially put out there, you know, and that's the establishment on both sides of the aisle and the what I call the shadow government, which is another government that operates underneath, as well as what we can call the deep state. So there's right, different names for these different things, or special interests, or some call it Agenda 21. But there's a lot of hundreds of billions of dollars out there, and money's to be made when these kind of deals go down. That's what I'm saying.
And that's really the bottom line right there. I mean, I think, you know, without going too far out on a limb, I think it boils down to certain people making a lot of money on these decisions, and to heck with the consequences.
I mean, the nuclear responsibility to the agency of our own. I'm talking about who's head of the Department of Energy, you know, who's head of oversight in the Congress for the Department of Energy, you know, Barbara Boxer.
Right.
So who are these people?
Who put Barbara Boxer in charge of anything? That's really what we should be asking.
that's a different kind of sarcastic question, but, you know.
Yeah, stop being sarcastic.
Sorry, that's where I really shine. National security, not so much. Sarcasm, I'm really all over that.
U.S. Senate and House Intelligence Committee's responsibilities for watching how this Uranium One played out back in, 2009, 10, 11, 12. And knowing that the Russian nuclear agency was running the Iranian nuclear plants, and knowing that one of our global threats would be to have the Iranians develop a ballistic missile that's a nuclear missile that
right,
can attack, you know, Europe, Israel, and then if they get the technology far enough, like some of the technology that's being found out to be in North Korea could reach, you know, Guam, or maybe the United States and Alaska.
Sure.
So that's why I don't get this whole idea about Rosatom, which is that nuclear Russian agency, and how they were allowed to even get to first base.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't know how that could ever have happened unless somebody somewhere with a lot of power looked the other way for money. Had to be. Somebody made some money.
And knowingly. I mean, here, not only did they have the Wyoming plant, they had additional uranium exploration rights to Arizona, Colorado, and Utah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to spread out their... And uranium, as you know, is for, you know, making weapons. So, I mean, this is not your average, you know, daily decision you make for national security. This is something very serious that has to be taken under advisement to the president and vice president and the National Security Council.
Right. So do you think, well, I'm sure you don't, but we haven't heard the end of this.
You don't know
what he
thinks.
It's, we're just scratching the surface on this whole thing, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think that may be part of the other investigation that will happen as this, they need to appoint another special counsel to look at what happened in these other areas, you know, the CFIUS area and that.
Yeah, we have to have a special counsel because the people that we pay to do this kind of work are too partisan to do it fairly and, and you know, without opinion. So we have to get a special counsel in there to get that done. That really torques me that we have an FBI and a Department of Justice that can investigate this stuff properly, that we have to go out and hire a special counsel again? Yeah, doesn't that seem a little odd?
Well, you have that, and you also have the Inspector General's report coming out, too. So
that's going to be... I'm looking forward to that. I don't think... I'm not sure people have followed that in the 2 minutes we have remaining. Can you give people a little sneak preview on what that may look like?
Yeah, that's an internal report done by CIA has their own Inspector General and the State Department. They can disclose information that's not normally done under circumstances because they're doing an internal investigation. Now, the first investigation that we saw done on the State Department was Benghazi, but it didn't go beyond the scope of the Benghazi incident. It didn't go up to upper management. It was created in order to look at what happened in Benghazi particularly and not necessarily what the decision-making process was at state or and through interagency, you would say the White House or DOD.
It didn't touch any of that.
That was their site. And the same thing with the FBI investigation. When they're looking at something of the Hillary Clinton, they had a narrow focus because that's what they're tasked to do. So, but like the Mueller investigation tends to be wide net. So they're trying to, you know, they throw a wide net out there to try to drag all kinds of things into it. So you get all kinds of fish and then you can, you know, bring those fish in and, you know, put indictments on them and throw them before a grand jury. So that's what a lot of people are complaining about because this could be never-ending and try to find something that normally wouldn't exist, but it wasn't according to a FISA warrant.
Right. So, yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem with the special prosecutors is they just have
just starts to go all over the place.
Yeah, open field to play in. Bruce, we're out of time.
Okay.
But great catching up with you. Thanks a lot for all the great information. And for people who would like to read further on this, he has given us a nice document. You can find it on the website at wethepeopleradio.us. Many thanks to our guest, Bruce Moran.
Thanks, Bruce.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is still Aaron Ryan.
And I'm still Bill Cundiff.
And are you going to do the little commercial?
Yeah, our sponsors. Sure. Our sponsors this hour, Team Power Tractors in Shasta Lake. They are our local John Deere and Kubota dealer. If you have any tractor needs, new, used, tractor repairs, or you just want to call up and talk about tractors, give them a call.
Yeah, don't do that. They don't have time for that.
No, they have time for
Ain't
that.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that. 226-9226. Talk to the friendly folks over there. They can get you fixed up. Right now they're running a winter special for service. So if you
Though we haven't had winter?
No, we've had winter. It was 3 weeks long. So the grass is growing, and if you need to get your stuff worked on, give them a call, and they'll get you fixed up over there in record time. Team Power, Shasta Lake at 3119 Twinview Boulevard. And that number again is 226-9226.
Area code 530 in case you live out of the area, which case you're probably not going to go there because it'll take too long to drive there.
Yeah, that's right.
How's
that's
that?
That's why I left it out.
And when they get their website fixed, we'll give you that. But right now, it's a secret. Our guest this hour is Peter Friedman. And you know what? It seemed like we hadn't had him on that long ago, and then I did a little homework. It was August 7th of 2016. What is wrong with us?
Jeez.
That's just bizarre.
Time flies.
Holy cow, yeah. I thought it was like last year.
Seemed like yesterday.
Couldn't believe it. So just to give you a little background in case you haven't been listening to us since 2016, I don't know what you've been doing on Sunday afternoons, but anyway, that's immaterial. Peter has been studying and lecturing on the threat of Islam to America for over 40 years. He maintains a thorough collection of Qurans and English translations, beginning with George Sale's translation of 1734 that I have not read, which is why we know Mr. Friedman, because he is the all-around expert. Lots of really good information about him, and one of the things that we had forgotten in reading his bio, many members of Peter Friedman's family were murdered in the Holocaust by the Nazis. It's also been a fascination that the Muslims supported the Germans both in World War I and World War II. And more detail there, he maintains a website called IslamThreat.com. And if you're driving or don't have anything to write with and can't remember all this good stuff, you can find all his information on our site along with links to previous shows at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Take it away, Mr. Friedman.
How are you this afternoon? I hadn't realized it had been that long.
I know, me either.
Didn't it seem like we just did a show? Long at all.
I know, I read through the archives twice. I know, we missed you too. So, it was funny when you sent me the article, Interfaith Discourse, Ritual Suicide. Bill started reading. He goes, have you read this yet?
That was fascinating reading. I'll tell you what, I don't know how you could sit there and be bludgeoned with that. It was incredible.
So for the people who didn't read the webpage.
I asked questions at the end when they had a Q&A session.
Oh, how'd that work out?
Well, they finally asked me if I would leave.
Yeah.
Not the kind of questions they want to answer.
And as I walked out, there was a very nice lady who was standing, an older lady standing at the door in the back as an usher. And she stopped me as I was walking out, and I was kind of grinning. And she stops me, and very quietly she says, you know, I agree with you.
Hmm.
Yeah, silently outside.
And I said, well, I'll tell you what, go to my website. So I gave her one of my cards and hadn't heard from her since, but it was very interesting because there was a minister and a rabbi who were walking around the sanctuary with a microphone. And I was very surprised. It was the female rabbi who asked me to please leave. I was being disruptive.
Oh. Hmm. Nice. Well, so I know this sounds like a setup for a joke, but this was an actual event you went to. There was an imam, a rabbi, and a pastor.
Yeah, and they all went into a bar.
Exactly.
No, it's very funny because the question that actually got me thrown out was I asked the rabbi and the pastor if they had ever actually sat down and read the Quran, all, you know, 6,247 verses. And they both said, well, no, we haven't, but, you know, we rely on our friend here, the imam. And I said, well, I said, would you like to know how many places today he has been wrong? And that pretty much did it.
That's a big N-O.
Yeah. Now you're just being hateful. You're being nitpicky.
So these guys were supposed to be the, I think the title was hilarious, they were the Interfaith Amigos. And it was at a Presbyterian church, and they were supposed to be telling everybody how great all these things can get along. Was that the?
Oh yeah, you know, it's the old Rodney King thing. Can't we all just get along? Well, no, we can't.
No.
You know, when you have a dialogue with somebody, it's supposed to be on an equal footing. You have opinions, they have opinions, and you try and compromise and hash it out. Well, there is no dialogue with Islam. There just isn't because of the ideology involved and what it says in the Quran about anybody who is a non-Muslim. It's that simple. And nobody bothers to read the book. That's why I put six copies up on the website. You know, starting with George Sale's from 1734, that's the first English translation. And when you take a look at the rest of the Qurans up there, they all say the same thing. One says, kill the Jews and Christians. The other says, slaughter them. You're still dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we put a book up there on our site.
That was the referral from you.
Yeah, all about Muhammad. Was it all
about?
Oh, yeah. It's All About Muhammad by Frank Burley.
Yeah, you want to read it.
My buddy Frank Burley.
That book, I'll tell you, it's a fairly lengthy read, but I will guarantee once you start it, you will not put it down. It's fascinating history of Muhammad, and it's, you know, you have it very well documented, but it really gives the life story of Muhammad and what he truly believed. And once you read that, I don't know how anybody could sit down and try to convince you that other faiths can live alongside the Muslim faith. It isn't what they believe.
Well, if you go to the Quran and you go to Book 3, verse 85, it specifically says, and I quote, "Any religion other than Islam is not acceptable to Allah."
Oh, mm-hmm. Deal breaker.
That's pretty clear.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. All the rest of that stuff in there is extremely clear. If you go on my website and you go to the Quran menu bar at the top, and it talks about the different Qurans there that are in PDF. They're all searchable, so you can put in the word kill and slaughter and all the rest of that, and it will do a Boolean search and then come up with every single verse that contains that word.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you come up with 109 violent war verses, you know, against the non-believer. You know, but nobody reads the book.
Right.
It fascinates the heck out of me. I think I told you the last time we talked about when I did a lecture at the local city college here in Pleasant Hill, in Diablo Valley College, and they were having a session on international relations, and the professor who I knew asked me if I would come up and talk to the class. So I went up there, and what I did was I handed out my Quran index. I printed it out, and it's three pages, three columns to a page. You can get it right on my website, download it for free, or you can download it from the internet. And I made it out actually in 2006, and because I got tired of hearing Sean Hannity debating some of these people and not being able to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And rebut what they were saying. So I printed the thing up and sent it to Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Doc Savage and all the rest of these people. It was very interesting because today, or at least since 2006 now, you very seldom see an imam who is debating, you know, the host without the host coming right back and reading off of this. Janine Pirro, as a matter of fact, I sent her the Reliance of the Traveler, which is the Sharia law. And I was fascinated to see her actually with the big green hardback book on her desk about a year ago debating somebody and asking them, well, what about this and what about this and what about this? So I was up there at the college and I handed out the Quran index to all of the violence and hatred in the Quran, where each verse had something to that effect. And a girl all of a sudden jumps up. She says, well, you know, I take exception to this document that you've given to us because it looks like you've cherry-picked all the violence out of the book. And I kind of looked at her and went,
yeah.
You know? And she says, there's a lot of peaceful information in there, too. And I said, well, I could care less about that. That's not a problem. And she says, I'm an Iranian Muslim, and I really am offended. And I said, well, really? I said, well, you're going to college here, you know, in America, and I'm looking around the room here, and I see all of these people here. Are these people your friends? Oh, yes, a lot of us are friends. And I said, well, do you hang out with your friends? Yes. Do you go to parties with your friends? Yes. Do you drink alcohol at those parties? Well, I drink wine. Okay. Have you, you know, been circumcised?
Ow.
And there was this dead silence. You could have heard a pin drop. And she says, well, no. She says, well, that's that's not for women. I said, really? I said, have you ever read the Quran? No. Well, how do you know what's in it? Well, my parents taught me. Well, maybe you should go read the Quran and read the Hadith and read the chapter in Bukhari that talks about female circumcision as well as male circumcision. I said, so let's take a stock of what you just said here. You call yourself a Muslim, yet you party, you listen to music, you dance, you drink, and you haven't been circumcised. Maybe you want to rethink how you characterize yourself because you're an apostate.
Oh, you are just making friends everywhere.
Oh, I'm telling you. You know, I read the book. I probably reread the Quran two or three times every year just to stay up on everything. Of course, it isn't going to change. But just so I remember, you know, verses and books in the Quran to answer questions. You know, and it's amazing. Nobody reads the book.
Right.
I remember that last time we spoke. That's honestly that's the bottom line, is that by not being familiar with what's in the book, we can't debate. Frank's book, it's all about Muhammad. Actually, we have that on our webpage along with this program. But it's one of the books we recommend, just because if you do wander into this discussion with somebody, it's a good tool. I mean, there are a lot of good, you guys have provided, between the two of you, you have the best tools out there for how to have a conversation about this. We need to take a really quick break, and then we will be back. Just in case you're afraid we're going to run out of information, that'll never happen. In case you're worried we're going to run out of time.
That's
our friend Peter Friedman. We have him as our hostage next week, too, so not to worry. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. All right, Peter. Let's, we should also let people know that one thing you provided to us today was, for one, information about the interfaith discourse that you went to, because I think they're doing that more and more, trying to kind of make this all normal. And you also gave people 10 questions they can ask if they go to one of those, so they too can be popular.
Yep. Couple of things, now that I got you here, this is great. I've been lecturing a lot on the refugee issue. But before I get into that, if you don't mind, I was accorded a great honor here last summer.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to put that on the page.
Oh, yes. I was named by the Southern Poverty Law Center as one of the 6 Bay Area hate groups. And it was hysterical, because as soon as they came out with that, what they have on their website is islamthreat.com. Because they have no idea who I am. So I was contacted through the website by half a dozen different reporters, and they wanted to know how big the group was, when we held our meetings. And I said, no, it's just a website. It's just me. Oh, well, why would the Southern Poverty Law Center say that you're the Bay Area hate group? I don't know. Maybe because I have put all these Qurans up on the internet. I said, that's where the hate comes from.
Yeah, no kidding.
You and Michael Savage, yeah. You're going to get banned from, you get banned from England, huh?
No, I already was back in 2009.
Oh, too late.
I had arranged over in London to do several lectures over there, and I was specifically told that I would be arrested if I did.
Wow. Just for showing up?
For showing up and saying anything critical of Islam.
And doing any kind of educating.
That's so much. Exactly. That's what multiculturalism will get you when you're when you're fully vested in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I got something interesting to relate to you. As a matter of fact, along the same line, what happened in Vegas in October?
It stays in Vegas, though, right?
Yeah. Well, I wish it did. From some of the people that I have who are involved in the intelligence area.
Okay.
And I say that very advisedly. It's, you know, it's like military intelligence. It's an oxymoron. But it was interesting to come up with the following information about Vegas, and maybe this has something to do why we don't know anything about it still.
Oh, the Vegas shooting. Not Vegas,
yeah.
Just the town.
No, the shooting.
No.
The Vegas, come on, keep up.
Vegas. Capital Vegas. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And what was interesting is, I think I told you before, I'm an NRA training counselor and a law enforcement firearm instructor. And I gave a class last Sunday all day, and in the class was this very lovely lady who showed me her wristband and related the fact that she was, in fact, in the audience down there and being shot at.
Oh.
And we had an interesting conversation because if you do the research, you'll discover that Al-Walid bin Talal, which a name should be familiar to everybody, owns 3 floors in the Mandalay Bay Hotel. One of the 3 floors is number 32, where Paddock did all the shooting from.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Walid bin Talal, if you know, was the son of Abdul Benaziz, who was the king of Saudi Arabia when Obama, he's the guy Obama bowed to back in 2009. And Abdulaziz went and died, and the next king became his younger brother. Now, his younger brother had a son, or has a son, named Salman Benaziz. If you know Salman is the guy now who is the crown prince, is going around Saudi Arabia doing a lot of modernizing. He has now granted women the right to drive and all kinds of stuff. And he wants to more westernize Saudi Arabia. Well, Al-Walid bin Talal, if you remember, is the guy who offered Rudy Giuliani $10 million on 9/12. And Rudy told him to take his check and depart with it. Al-Walid bin Talal subsequently gave $20 million to Elena Kagan, who is a justice on our Supreme Court now, back in November of 2008 after the election, electing Obama, when Elena Kagan was the president of Harvard Law School. Now, all of this is up on my website, and it's the very first thing you come to on the left-hand sidebar, Islamic Finance 101 at Harvard. And you can read the whole thing up there. I have a copy of the actual seminar program for Islamic Finance 101 that was sponsored by the United States Treasury and Harvard Law School and Elena Kagan. So Kagan took the $20 million back in 08.
On behalf of Harvard?
On behalf of Harvard.
Okay.
Al-Walid bin Talal also gave $20 million to John Esposito at Georgetown University to set up an Islamic studies program. And Al-Walid bin Talal is the guy who also bought shares of stock in News Corp that Rupert Murdoch sold him. So Al-Walid bin Talal owns a piece of Fox News. And Rupert Murdoch then got the opportunity to buy into Talal's network in the Middle East. So Talal thought he was going to be the next king of Saudi Arabia. That didn't happen, okay, because his dad died and his uncle took over. So Talal has very bad blood between him and his cousin Salman Aziz. Well, it happens that on the night of that shooting, Al-Waleed bin Talal happened to be in Vegas at the same time his cousin, Salman bin Aziz, was staying at the Tropicana. And apparently at the Tropicana, there was also a shootout of some kind. And the word is starting to go around that Al-Waleed bin Talal tried to set up an assassination of his cousin at the Tropicana and somehow got involved with Paddock at Mandalay Bay as a diversion.
Wow.
Just little dots, you know. And I don't know whether anybody has really investigated that or, you know, the Bureau, of course, is too involved investigating, you know, Trump's collusion with Russia.
Yeah, right. Imaginary collusions. Much, much more interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Holy cow. So, we need like you almost need a little playbook for some of that. I thought you were going to, here I'm thinking you're going to tell us you got banned from Las Vegas. Well, now you probably are, actually. I guess maybe that's official.
Nothing official, but everything has gone dark.
Well, and that has become plainly obvious. Huh, well, let's let that sink in. We have to include some celebration of capitalism here, and then we'll be back with our guest, Peter Friedman. You can find him on our site at wethepeopleradio.us, and links to all of his information are on there. You'll like it. And we're back. All righty. Mr. Friedman, I should add one thing, that you have a nice note here about your website, IslamThreat.com. It says, this website is created by Peter Friedman, containing his research and opinions. He is a scholar and a researcher, and an all-around good guy, who brings in-depth analysis and sterling references to subjects that most people are afraid to discuss. And that's absolutely the truth. Most people are afraid to wade into this because...
I get labeled a hater.
Well, let's face it, you get tangled in your own rope. I mean, we're not reading the Quran three times a year and dissecting it. So, you know, you just don't feel confident weighing in. They say one thing and you're like, oh, dead in the water.
I'll tell you something funny. You brought up my friend Frank's book. It's all about Muhammad. Up until about 150 years ago... Muslims were not referred to as Muslims. They were referred to as Mohammedans. And throughout history for something like 1,200 years. And the problem was that long about 150 years ago, people started inquiring about the life of Muhammad, because in the Quran and in the Hadith, it states that, you know, Muhammad led the perfect life, and that all followers of Muhammad should try to emulate him. And then a lot of this stuff started to come out about Muhammad, and that's when they decided that they better change the name, you know, for PR purposes, and that's when you wound up with Muslims, who are followers, translated, of Islam.
Oh, I did not know that.
If you go back and you start looking up Mohammedans, they were the followers of Muhammad. And Muslim is a recent thing. It's kind of like Palestinians, you know. Palestine wasn't referred necessarily, or the people living there, as Palestinians until Nixon.
Hmm. No kidding. What were they?
Little piece of history.
What were they before that?
They were just Arabs.
Oh. So what about all this whole thing about their culture and blah, blah, blah?
Well, there was no culture. I mean, that's all. All of that is nonsense. It's a myth. The closest thing that you can come to Palestinian historically would be the Philistines in biblical you know, biblical lore and the Bible and Goliath and, you know, and anybody who was referred to as a Philistine, you know, was somebody who had no integrity, no honor, and was a lecherous person. And
yeah.
they were a Philistine.
Well, a Philistine wasn't a place. It was a slur, right?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
You know, but, you know, it just goes on and on. And, you know, there was the mandate for Palestine in 1922 as a result of the Versailles Peace Conference. And the mandate for what then was referred to as Palestine was given to the British. And that's a whole other, you know, thing that we can do if you ever want to. But
so in the days course. In the days of Muhammad, I'm sure there were quite a few Muslim. What's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Moderates. I mean, there were moderate Muslims back then. How did that all start coming about? Because if you're a moderate Muslim, you're not really a Muslim, are you?
That's absolutely correct. You're an apostate. You have to understand that
That's
Islam,
terrible.
As an ideology, is not moderate.
Right.
So you either follow it and are devout to it, and you believe all the religious obligations to, for example, in the Quran, Book 2, 191, slay the believers wherever you find them. Book 9, verse 123, make war on the infidels living in your neighborhood. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. So, you know, as a matter of fact, I can give you a personal reference. I work with appears to be a very nice guy, who's 30 years old, and, he is a Muslim, or was raised that way, from Pakistan. And his father is a university professor. His mother also, you know, is very well educated. You know, and it was very funny because when I got involved with this company where he is, and I, after a couple of weeks, I said, you know, I feel obligated to tell you my background as far as Islam is concerned. He says, oh, he says, I know all about it. He says, I looked you up on the internet.
Oops.
And I said, and
I've been putting arsenic in your sandwiches for 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, sorry.
You know, and I said, and what's your opinion? He says, well, he says, actually, he says, I agree with you. He says, and I am not that kind, you know, and I was not raised that way, and I know what's in the book, but I feel that that just is not where I want to be, which is why I'm in America, which is why I became an American citizen. And I said, well, you got to be very careful in mixed company when you characterize yourself as a Muslim, you know. And I said, you know, imagine, for example, with what I know, okay, and the background of my family, if I am introduced to somebody and he's wearing a swastika armband, I know exactly who he is. In the same vein, if I'm introduced to someone who characterizes themselves as a Muslim, then from my background and my research and everything, I kind of understand who they are, which then begs the question, how much of that do you really subscribe to and that you feel religiously committed to enact? So it all depends. Now, this guy that I know, I've been with him for over a year now, and I would have no problem with him moving in next door because he's a bad Muslim, you know,
in a good way.
And he has two beautiful kids. His wife does not wear a hijab, whatever, but that's the cultural background that he comes from. But I can't characterize him as a moderate Muslim. I would characterize him as a Muslim who does not believe in the violence and hatred in the Quran and the religious obligations against non-believers.
So how can you call yourself a Muslim? I mean, that's like saying, I'm a Christian, but the whole Jesus thing, I mean, he was probably a nice guy and everything, but I'm not really drinking the Kool-Aid on that. It's the
Excellent.
It's the same thing.
I dragged you into my trap.
Well,
that's where I see it.
Bill's got a hook hanging right out of his lip.
So I get into this intellectual conversation with him, and I said, okay, I said, answer me this. I said, if you take the Old Testament and you can only keep one thing out of the Old Testament that will help everybody to live peacefully with each other, what would it be? Well, the Ten Commandments. Okay, take the New Testament. If you can only keep one thing out of the New Testament that will help everybody to live peacefully with each other, what would it be? Well, how about going to Matthew, you know, and the Sermon on the Mount, and the Beatitudes, love and compassion? There you go. And I said, let's get to you. If you could only keep one thing out of the Quran that would help you to live peacefully with your neighbors, what would it be? Dead silence.
Oops.
Dead silence. And he said, well, he says, maybe we should hold that off for a discussion another day. I said, okay. So every now and then I ask him if he's thought about it. So we'll convert him.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, there's no, as they say, no there.
There is no there. What are you going to do? So, you know, he started to bring up the five, you know, pillars of faith, and I'm going, okay, and what's number four? Well, he says that's charity. Really? What is the Arabic word in the five pillars? And he goes, well, it's zakat. Okay, well, now tell me what the difference is between zakat and sadaqah in Arabic. Well, I really don't know. Okay, well,
we don't either. What's the difference?
I'll tell you what the difference is. Zakat is the fourth pillar of the faith of Islam. It is not charity. It is a tax. It is a tax that can be used only for eight purposes. It's found in Sharia, and purpose number seven of zakat is for arming the holy warriors.
In other words, that tax is to be used for that purpose.
That is for holy war, for jihad.
Mm-hmm.
Sadaqah, on the other hand, is charity, and you can give sadaqah to a non-Muslim. A Muslim can actually give sadaqah to a non-Muslim. But he cannot give zakat, to anybody but a Muslim. And so all of a sudden, he goes, where would I find that? I said, well, come into my office. So I handed him a copy of Reliance of the Traveler, and I showed him exactly where it is. And he says, gee, I didn't know that. I said, well, maybe you should think about, you know, some of this stuff and how you're raising the kids, and you're in America. And understand, you know, that not all cultures are equal.
Or compatible.
Or compatible. Yeah, it was a very interesting conversation.
Wow.
Anyway.
That's pretty cool.
I just want to touch on the refugee thing for a minute.
All right, hang on 2 seconds, and we will do our final celebration of capitalism for the hour. And then we'll roll it right up to the top. And whatever we have left over, like everything, we'll hit next week, because there's a lot of good stuff in here, and you have a ton of information, and we have missed you. So, our guest is Peter Friedman. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
We're back.
Bill doesn't do modern music. Okay, I don't either. We don't know anything about modern music. We stopped listening somewhere in the 70s, I think. Okay, so you were going to talk about the refugee situation. Can you believe that? I remembered that all the way through that two-minute break. Bonus points for me.
Excellent. I'd like to actually do the whole program next week on what I've been doing with the refugee situation and lecturing.
Oh, good.
And going through, you know, the various laws and stuff. But one of the things that I found really interesting lately is that out of the Syrian refugees that we've brought here, Starbucks has employed 10,000 of them, and the head of Starbucks, Howard Schultz, has asked for another 10,000.
Wow.
So I go to Pete's. I shop at Pete's now.
I drink gas station coffee. I'm just out of the whole thing. Or Dutch Brothers, because they're really nice up here, and they're good guys. Interesting. So, okay, do you want to, I realize we have like 10 minutes. Can you buzz through some of the questions for those people that may not go online? I mean, let's encourage them to go on there and read these, because actually it's super informative. But if you do wind up going to some interfaith thing where everybody's trying to tell you, oh, it's just like Christianity, only just slightly different.
Yeah, it's a whole lot different. Let me give you a couple of teasers so that maybe people can ask questions next week. What was really interesting getting into this is that we didn't have any immigration between 1924 and 1964. Zip, nada. And the reason was that in 1924, you might find this very interesting. Go, you know, check it up. In 1924, we had in America what was called the Red Scare, the R-E-D, Red Scare. What happened was that there were a lot of Bolsheviks who Stalin threw out of Russia after the revolution in 1917, came over here, and in 1924, they banded together and tried to overthrow the government of the United States and set up a communist government. They were put down rather severely. And again, look it up on Google. It's called the Red Scare. And that is when the ACLU was created. And the ACLU was created specifically in 1924 to defend the communists that tried to overthrow the American government. So what happened was between 1924 and 1964, there was no immigration. And that was basically because of what had happened under the Red Scare. We didn't want to bring anybody in here that we really didn't, you know who they were.
Well, you can't do that today.
No. So what happened in 1964?
Diversity law.
1964, as you recall, we had Lyndon Johnson. And Lyndon Johnson got into cahoots with Ted Kennedy and, believe it or not, Joe Biden. And they...
Uncle Joe?
Uncle Joe, and I hope he runs in 2020 if he's still alive, because I will broadcast this to the rooftops. Joe Biden and Ted Kennedy went to Johnson and said that we got a neat idea for what to do with all the Vietnamese refugees now that we're in Vietnam. We're going to bring them over here in droves. We're going to make them citizens, and they're all going to vote Democrat because we're going to put them on welfare. 1964.
No,
great society, you know, the war on poverty, all of this crazy nonsense. And I'm dying to go see this new movie with Woody Harrelson playing LBJ to find out whether any of that garbage is in there.
I'm just guessing. No.
Nobody has ever asked Joe Biden, you know, tell us about 1964 and this whole refugee thing with the Vietnamese and everything. Well, then we fast forward to 1993 with Bill Clinton. And in 93 with Bill Clinton, if you recall, that's when Clinton brought 20,000 Somalis over here after Mogadishu. And that's why we have all the Somali problems in Minnesota. And a lot of them were given to Tyson Chicken down in Arkansas. Gee whiz, Arkansas, Bill Clinton.
And you have a huge Somali population in Maine, of all places.
Oh, yes, they do now. So, you know, if you start to follow all of this stuff, in the 96 election, his re-election, just before the election, he and Al Gore got together, and they came up with a scheme to naturalize 330,000 of these people so that they would vote Democrat in that election. All this stuff is
wow.
out there.
Wow.
You know, all you got to do is look it up if you have an interest. It's all out there, but this is the kind of stuff that I would love to go into next week. There are 9 exclusive charitable institutions that are contracted to the State Department to bring the refugees in here and to essentially resettle them. In California, there have been 7,000 refugees a year coming from Muslim countries that have settled here. There are 4 targeted cities. This is all documented in material that I'll send you this week so that you can read it for yourself in the congressional report every year that has to go to the judiciary committees of the House and the Senate. How many refugees the president intends to bring in, where they're coming from, the countries, the median ages, all of this kind of stuff. And what was interesting is in the last 2016-2017 reports, there are 4 targeted cities for Muslim resettlement in California. There's San Diego, Modesto, Sacramento, and Walnut Creek.
Wow.
And
now, is that still on the slate to happen, or was that from the previous administration?
Nope. They're still trying to bring that in. That's the State Department issue. And
okay.
I think that's why DeSantis, you know, Congressman DeSantis from Florida, has decided that he's going to start looking into the State Department and what they were up to during the Obama administration and to bring all of this stuff to the attention of the current administration. So, you know, hopefully Trump is going to stand his ground on this DACA thing and kill this diversity visa program and kill the chain migration issue, you know, which all the Democrats today are saying is, you know, a dog whistle for racism, yet they were all saying it 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, that's unfortunate, isn't it? And awkward.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. But, you know, people, you know, you've got to stay vigilant, you've got to stay alert, and you've got to stay informed. It scares the hell out of me every time I see, you know, Jesse Waters on Fox News or Jeanine Pirro walking around Manhattan and asking people, you know, who the vice president is, and they have no idea.
Yeah.
Isn't that still Joe Biden? No, we had a change in regime here. So,
yeah.
You know.
Actually, that's pretty good if they even knew that. That's actually not bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I cannot imagine what would have happened if Hillary had been elected.
Hmm. Oh, yeah. We'd be living in a whole new world.
Yeah, nothing good.
Done. You know, absolutely done.
Well, and then on the flip side, you have the people who are happy with the way things turned out, but their civics education isn't much stronger. I have people who ask me all the time why, you know, our local congressman can't just go to the president to tell him to go to one of the secretaries to tell one of the agencies to, you know, go do something that actually is against the law.
Separation of power.
And it's like, hey, that's Venezuela, you know?
Well, we've got to do something about some of these federal judges. You know, it seems to me, at least we're in the Ninth Circuit, and it seems to me, since that's the most overturned circuit in the country, that if a federal court judge is overturned, let's say, 3 times, you remember the 3 strikes and you're outlaw?
I was going to say.
Oh, God, I've said that for a long time with
these
judges.
Baseball.
You know, if you are overturned in your judgment 3 times, then you're relieved of duty. You know, you're out of here. So we'll
not
see
a
what
bad
happens.
Idea.
We'll see what happens. 3 strikes and you're out.
No kidding. Out of your points here that you suggest people bring up, what do you think are the top 2?
At this particular point in time, I would think that. Oh, God, I'd love to talk about the FBI, but that's a whole different issue.
Well,
I worked for them undercover back in the 90s. And
you did?
I got some really funny stories.
Hey, we didn't know that.
We'll hit that next week.
Put that on the list for next week.
Put that on the list, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what FBI stands for, right?
I'm sure your acronym's more fun than ours.
Famous but incompetent.
That's actually pretty good.
Remind me to tell you about a sting operation we did with DOD back in 1992. It was hysterical.
Nothing
ever changes. Nothing changes. You know, it's like FAA, feds against aviation, or find another answer.
You know, it's so funny you say that because my father, who passed away in 2000, was in law enforcement his whole life, and I, to this day, cannot remember one good thing he ever said about the FBI. He always referred to them as just bundlers. You know, they just couldn't get stuff right. They just and I always thought, well, it's just a
Dad being a hater.
Yeah, you know, there's got to be something more to it. Because the FBI, I mean, this is a premier law enforcement agency on the planet. But I got to tell
propaganda.
Yeah,
propaganda.
Lately I think we're starting to see what was really going on there. So, hey, we are totally out of time. But Peter, we're going to make a list.
But we're not really out of time. We're just taking a brief pause that takes 7 days.
Yeah, because we got a lot to talk about.
We're going to come back. Hey, and what you send us, obviously, for next week, I will have posted. I have the page built for next week, so folks can go on the website. Take a look at that, read stuff about today, go onto your page and look up everything. So you can find all the information about our show, archives, guest at wethepeopleradio.us. Thanks, Peter. See you next week.